The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money in markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Tuesday morning, August 20th, 2019. The Beating the Book podcast, fantasy, football, special. Warren Sharp on the show to talk about the schedules faced, doing it his way, which are the most difficult, which are the easiest. Then we'll hear from Jeff Ratcliffe from Pro Football Focus. He's got answers to some big fantasy questions going into the 2019 fantasy football season. We'll close it out with our old friend Todd Wright. He's got perspective as well. It's all brought to you today by the Football Analytics Show. It's a podcast run by Ed Fang, frequent guest on the Megapod. And during the final 2 weeks of August, he's doing the 2019 preview series. It's a set of 10 episodes of 10 minutes each that previews the season. 10 episodes of 10 minutes each. I like them kind of nuggets. Both college football and NFL will be covered, of course. It's the Football Analytics Show. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Check that out. In the meantime, enjoy the fantasy football special on the Beating the Book podcast.
He's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Analytics, statistics, and more are used to win wagers, and Guild has every number you need to cash your tickets. Now, live from the VSiN studios in the South Point Hotel and Casino, it's Gil Alexander.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at VSiN, where sports betting analytics live, actionable sports betting information, SiriusXM channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app. Perhaps you prefer Fubo TV or Sling or Game Plus throughout Canada and New York City. I'm just happy you're on any of them. Tuning us in, we appreciate it here. Jeff Parles, producer number five, is here as well. Jeff, always a treat when we bring in this gentleman. He has his own professional football preview guide each and every offseason, and that's about thing number 10 in his world these days. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the great Warren Sharp. Good morning to you, Warren.
Hey, good morning, Gil. Happy to join you again. Looking forward to the start of the season and hopefully the first of many conversations.
I hope so. Warren, first of all, before you even got on air, just last segment, I just went through the Dr. David Chow portion of your preview guide, and I was reading off his thoughts on injuries of certain players, Cam Newton, Todd Gurley, Sony Michel, and Darius Geis. Good Lord, man, that put me in a bad mood as a Redskin fan.
Well, that coupled with, you know, the fact that this has been the most injured team in the NFL for the last 5 years. Their field is a terrible travesty, and they don't do a very good job of re-signing players. there's plenty to check into some counseling over.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, what happened at the play? Before we get to the strength of schedule stuff from you, I just want to cherry pick, because now your preview guide, first of all, how long does it take you to put together your preview guide? Because it would take me from now to like mid-August to fully digest every nugget in there. What's that process like?
Yeah, and that's actually not a bad thing to spend some time with it and dive in. So I pretty much, you know, the Super Bowl is the beginning of February. I take a little bit of time off immediately thereafter. And then I start going through updating statistics, updating metrics that are going to be used for the guide comprising the entire season, updating all of the visualizations that are in here. And that's one of the things for listeners who can't see it. You know, it's full color. It's full color. Every team has 7 pages devoted to metrics that are color coded and coordinated. So it's easy for you to see which players and which areas your team is doing well in and poorly in, and then retain that. It's a visualized learning tool from the color coding perspective. At any rate, then I'm pretty much working on it from, I'd say, like early March all the way through till the end of June when I publish it. And especially the last month, I mean, I'm working just as much as I am during the season when I'm consulting for some teams, and that's pretty much until like 3 a.m. every night. So I don't get a whole lot of sleep, you know, in the month of May. It's tough because you have to incorporate NFL draft related information, and that sometimes changes some of your perspectives on the direction a team is heading. As you know, Gil, you know, certain draft picks, apart from quarterback, don't actually modify a team's win total
right
that radically. However, it sort of impacts your thought process on what this team is valuing and what direction they're headed and some of the trades they might make in the draft and players they might acquire in exchange for picks. And so there's a lot of, you know, the write-up is in the narrative portion, is a lot of theoretical discussion about the team's philosophies. And so you can't do any of that until the draft has occurred.
All right, let me try to address a couple dangling participles there, which we brought up. One, first of all, where do people get the preview guide?
So the best place for me to get it is if you go to sharpfootballanalysis.com. We completely revamped that site, and we've brought in a lot of new writers or providing content. We're really excited about the website, but you could buy the PDF version there. And the other way you could get it, if you want to have the printed copy, which I make 21 cents per copy on, by the way, is over at Amazon, and that's the way that you can get the full-color book. Now, I will admit, even though I make a lot more money on you purchasing it from the website, I love having a printed copy to just thumb through and have my fingertips on. But there are those people that prefer PDF, and so we certainly are offering that as well.
All right, the PDF option and then the hard copy, which makes Warren 21 cents per issue. You decide whichever one you want. And the other thing there is you threw it in. You did it very casually there, Warren, before we get into this. You threw in, I will be consulting for NFL teams, plural. Please explain what you can about that.
I was been approached this offseason by almost 10 teams to do consulting work for. Some were interested in full-time roles that would have required me to, you know, jump off everything, Twitter, social media, leave this world and go live in their city and work for their team. And I got to meet a lot of different people with those teams from, you know, the GMs to the head coach to the offensive coordinator, defense coordinator, all the people down to the strength and conditioning guys. And it was a great process. Ultimately, I'm still remaining in a consulting role for a couple different teams this upcoming season, and I'm super excited about doing that and kind of trying to implement some of the strategies that I've come up with and actually make them have real success on the field on Sundays, and that's always a challenge, but it's very rewarding at the same time when it works.
Man, congratulations to you, Warren. I know this is a long time coming. It's been hard work through the years, and no one deserves it more than you do. So mazel tov to you on that. As far as your guide is concerned here, there's no way we can do it justice here in two segments. But let me throw out a few nuggets here before we get to some strength of schedule stuff. Let me throw out a few nuggets. And this is just from the very first section of your book. And I'm going to try to aggravate a few fan bases here. Buffalo Bills. This might even be from your first section in the book. Buffalo Bills. The Bills called the most runs on 2nd and 10+ yards plays to go in the NFL last year, running the ball on 45% of those play calls. Those runs produced a successful gain just 21% of the time. Because of their early down play calling, the Bills faced 3rd and 8.3 yards to go on average, the longest distance to go in the National Football League. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't LeSean McCoy the previous year just do unbelievable things with the Bills offense, putting him in the worst possible situations? I think that I think I recall that as well. Is there any hope for you, given that? And again, so much of what you and I talk about with Crackman through the football season is, all right, you've identified the problem. Do you have any confidence in the coaching staff figuring that out?
Right. Well, the bigger kind of underlying theme here is that, unfortunately, a lot of coaches believe that they're going to, quote unquote, protect their rookie quarterbacks by running the ball a lot, by being conservative on early downs. And we'll only pass the ball when we need to, which is like when we're in third and long situations. Well, you know, when you get into these second and 10 situations, you got to try to pass the ball. You're not going to get enough efficiency running it. And then you're going to be stuck in situations where you're being predictable on third and long. And the key for offenses, you must realize, offensive coordinators must realize, that all the chips are in your stack. Like, you control so much and dictate so much. The rules are slanted in your favor. The one thing you can't give up is predictability towards the defense. When you do that, you're just giving them portions of your chips. And you cannot be in predictable situations. So voluntarily choosing to be in third and long situations because you're calling run plays on second and 10 is a terrible decision. They thought they were protecting Josh Allen. They actually compounded the situation and made it worse on Josh Allen because of these third and very long situations. It can improve if they feel like Josh Allen's no longer a rookie. Maybe we can put a little bit more on his plate. So in this situation, I think it could improve a little bit for Bills fans, but I still think at their core, they're probably going to be too run-oriented than I would prefer.
Denver Broncos, Warren. We're talking to Warren Sharp at Sharp Football on Twitter. Great, great football follow through the season. I mean, sometimes Warren's rants on Twitter are epic. Denver Broncos, your point, arm strength does not equate to efficient deep passing. In 2018, Joe Flacco ranked 32nd of 33 quarterbacks on deep passes. His 34% completion rate was also 32nd. In 2017, Flacco ranked 31st of 32 quarterbacks on deep passes. His 32% completion rate was also 31st. 2016, Flacco, 29th of 31 quarterbacks on deep passes, 29% completion rate, ranked 30th. Over the last 3 years combined, of 27 qualifying quarterbacks with enough deep attempts, Flacco's deep passing ranks dead last in the NFL. As you point out, Joe Flacco may have a big arm, but it hasn't helped at all with his ability to make deep throws yet. And by the way, the Bills' season win total, who we just talked about, was 7. So is the Broncos, right at 7. Still better off with Flacco, or are we trying to say maybe not so much?
Well, I think John Elway, the problem with John Elway is he's so infatuated with arm strength, right? Like, that's the number one thing that he talks about when he's looking at quarterback prospects is arm strength, because he had a decent arm, and so that's what he thinks makes a great quarterback. In Joe Flacco's case, yes, he can throw the ball far. He's got a good arm, but his accuracy, his success on those passes is terrible. So what are you actually getting? You're getting a guy who can throw it far but not well. I don't think that's beneficial. And the other thing that we know is that it's not about your arm. Mike Leach talked about it at Sloan this past offseason. It's about your accuracy. That's the number one. There's a number of tenets that Mike Leach professes that the quarterback must have, and accuracy is the best one. And you can't teach accuracy. You just are accurate or you're not. You just have that kind of ability to judge depth perception and speed and, you know, distance and how you got to pass the football. Joe Flacco is not that accurate. So I'm not saying he's a downgrade over what they've had in the past few years there. He could be an upgrade, but he's certainly not a good quarterback just because he has arm strength. And I think, you know, John Elway continues to fail and draft these big, tall guys with strong arms like Brock Osweiler, who have been colossal disasters, and he hasn't learned his lesson. We'll see how Joe Flacco pans out for him.
Man, I'm sitting here smiling, Warren, because I can't wait for football season, because we, you, me, Michael Lombardi, when he's on this show, we spend so much time talking about the mind-boggling things that coaches and organizations do in the National Football League. Let me pick on just one more. The Oakland Raiders, soon to be in Las Vegas. There's a note here, Tom Cable, and again, we're just cherry-picking stuff from Warren's Pro Football Guide, his 2019 Pro Football Preview Guide. Tom Cable's an offensive line coach. Here's his lines, rankings, and pass protection during Tom Cable's NFL career. Again, Tom Cable with the Oakland Raiders now. 2006, Atlanta, 31st. Is that a 32? 2007, Oakland, 27th. 2008, Oakland, 30th. 2009, Oakland, 31st. 2010, Oakland, 26th. 2011, Seattle, 24th. 2012, Seattle, 20th. 2013, Seattle, 32nd, dead last. 2014, Seattle, 24th. 2015, Seattle, 30th. 2016, Seattle, 25th. 2017, Seattle, 25th. Last year, Oakland, 25th. And it should be pointed out, in many of these cases, the year prior to his arrival, the team's offensive lines and pass protection were top 10 operations in many cases. And then he took over. And yet here he is, offensive line coach with the Oakland Raiders. When you see stuff like that, are you just like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, too many fans assume that the coaching staff understands everything. The owners are making good decisions. That if the team isn't winning, it's largely because players aren't executing, players are making mistakes. The reality is that oftentimes the person in charge of hiring some of these people just doesn't have the numbers at their fingertips. They don't have the understanding, nor do they care. And a perfect example is Tom Cable. I mean, this guy, he's made four different stops. He's bottom 10 virtually everywhere he's been. He makes offensive lines worse when he starts coaching them. And the longer he's with them, oftentimes they get worse. So this guy is a problem as a NFL offensive line coach. And, you know, it's just mind-boggling. Nothing more to say. I don't know why he keeps getting jobs.
Raiders season win total, 6. Again, over, slightly juiced, minus 130. These courtesy of the Westgate season win totals and the lines, the individual game lines you see on the screen, all courtesy of CG Technology. I could go on and on, but again, this is just a flavor for what you can find nuggets in Warren Sharp's 2019 Pro Football Preview Guide. So just generally speaking then, because I won't pick on anyone individually here anymore, but generally speaking, what are the teams, Warren, the team or teams that you feel shuns analytics the most or just has the most general lack of awareness of most of the tenets that you point out in your guide at Sharp Football Stats and at Sharp Football Analysis?
Well, there's a couple teams that, you know, have talent and they're not using analytics enough to help get them over the edge. The two teams that perhaps are the most talented but aren't using enough analytics out there, in my opinion, are the Seattle Seahawks and the LA Chargers. I mean, these are perennial playoff contenders. And over the last several years, you know, in the Chargers case longer than that, they can't get over that hump. And, you know, for the Chargers, their case is they just don't do enough. They've started to throw the football to the running backs more. So that's great. That's perfectly in line on early downs with what you're supposed to be doing. But, I mean, I just wrote an article up at Sharp Football Analysis earlier today. Phillip Rivers has started every single game since 2015, Gil. Every single game. No quarterback has started more games than him. The best play on short yardage is the quarterback sneak. They convert about 78% of the time. Running back, you hand off to them, it's about 20% worse conversion rate. How many quarterback sneaks does Phillip Rivers have in those 4 years since 2015 when he started every single game? One sneak. It makes no sense. Brady's got like 38. Even a guy like Drew Brees, shorter, smaller than both Brady and Phillip Rivers, has 28 attempts, and he's converted 26 of them into first downs. That's 93%. The fact that Phillip Rivers refuses to quarterback sneak the ball in these short yardage situations,
it's amazing.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's almost worn like it's written into his contract if you didn't know any better, right? Like, you never see Phillip Rivers quarterback sneak. You never see Ben Roethlisberger run play action. Like, it just doesn't happen, like, as often as it should. And you point out at some point in the book, too, these are two things we've talked about on the show before, but that's a thing with the Steelers. They just don't. Why aren't they running more play action? Play action helps tremendously in certain situations. With the Seahawks, who you mentioned, it's all about they run too much. Just so many fascinating tidbits. We'll come back, Warren. We'll take a break. We want to get into some strength of schedule stuff because you do that very well. It's Warren Sharp from at Sharp Football on Twitter, sharpfootballstats.com, sharpfootballanalysis.com. We'll talk more about his preview guide, strength of schedule, next on A Numbers Game at Visa.
Now, back to a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander, broadcasting live from our VSiN studios in Las Vegas.
Back on a numbers game, Sports Betting Analytics Live. Gil Alexander right here at VSiN, Sirius XM Channel 204. Warren Sharp, kind enough to join us this morning for a spell. Warren, just before the break, I asked you, what are the team or teams in the National Football League that are least embracing of analytics? And you said of the teams with talent, it would of a lot of talent would be the Chargers and the Seahawks. If we took away that qualifier of the teams with talent and let's just said all 32 teams, would the Redskins be number one on that list?
Well, they would be close. They certainly are problematic with their run rate on early downs. It got worse with Adrian Peterson. You know, Jay Gruden's infatuated with that. And it's very unproductive. And the problem is that now they may be starting. I mean, for a while you thought there he was doing it because he didn't love his quarterback. But, I mean, Kirk Cousins was giving him a certain level of play. And, you know, they continued to run the football. So you say, okay, maybe it was – maybe Jay didn't think as highly of Kirk. Okay, well, so they brought in Alex Smith. They handpicked him. They still were doing it. Without Alex Smith, they still were doing it. And now you've got either Case Keenum or possibly a rookie. And I think they're probably still going to continue to run too much. Now, they did hire an analytics guy this upcoming season to try to assist them. How much, though, influence he'll be able to have over, like, play calls in that capacity is I'm skeptical of, but we'll see. I mean, I always hope that teams change their ways and do things more intelligently, but I take a realistic approach to it, a pragmatic approach, and, you know, Jay Gruden it can't change his stripes that quickly, I don't think.
Yeah, if they push Scott McLuhan out, they can push anybody out in D.C. Famous Sloan Sports Conference, which you, by the way, were on a panel for this past year, so congratulations to you on that. But a famous one a couple years ago, a few years back, I ran into Matthew Berry from ESPN, fantasy guy who, of course, is a huge Redskin fan as well, for those who don't know, from D.C. And I said to him, does it bother you like the only NFL team not here are the Redskins? And he looked around and he goes, yeah, actually it does. Like, so just not very exciting for those of us who would like the Redskins to approach things perhaps with a little more brain power. All right, so Warren, strength of schedule. We talk about this every year, and we talked a little bit about it earlier in the offseason when season win totals were first coming out. But break this down for us in terms of the easiest and hardest pass defenses, run defenses faced, however you want to parse it out.
Right. So I think first, I mean, we have to understand just who are you facing? And the team that has the most interesting schedule variance from the 2018 season is the Houston Texans. And we talked about that before. They have my number one easiest schedule last year. They have the number one most difficult schedule this year, and other teams that are grouped near them are the Broncos, the Raiders, and now the Dolphins. The Dolphins, as I've adjusted my strength of schedule analytics based on some tweaks that Vegas has made to the season win totals. By the way, there really hasn't been a whole lot of movement with season win totals since they've opened. It's been a kind of a unique year. I imagine we'll see more as training camps open and injuries start to occur. But and the Titans also have a very difficult schedule. On the flip side of that, the teams that I projected what a month or two ago with you to have the easiest schedule still have the easiest schedule. It's the Patriots, of course, because they play in the AFC East. The Jets also have a very easy schedule, as do the Bills. So the AFC East plays an easy schedule of opponents. Throw in there the Eagles and the Browns. That's your top five easiest overall schedules. If we want to talk about from a fantasy perspective, as well as, you know, what's going to help quarterback play, and I think you've known this for a while now. We've kind of alluded to it. But when fans are looking at what's my team, how are we going to do this year, keep in mind, offense is more important to your wins and losses than is defense, and passing offense is more important to your wins and losses than rushing offense. So the first place you might want to start with strength of schedule is just analyzing which teams are going to face easier, tough schedules of opposing pass defenses. Take into mind these are projections. Also take into mind that great quarterbacks and passing offenses can overcome tough schedules. Where it hurts is where mediocre passing offenses face a tough schedule. And where it really helps is when a good passing offense faces a really easy schedule. So let's run through the five easiest schedules of passing defenses this year. Arizona Cardinals with Cliff Kingsbury, they're going to face the number one easiest schedule of pass defenses, which should be really interesting and make things fun out in Arizona with Kyler Murray. Obviously growing pains, but they will face the easiest schedule of pass defenses. Carolina with Cam Newton, how's his shoulder going to do? That's going to be interesting. The 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo at number three, obviously getting him back is valuable. That offense was way beyond expectations in terms of doing really good last year with backup caliber quarterbacks. I love the job that Kyle Shanahan did. Number four is the Minnesota Vikings. Kirk Cousins getting another shot at having a good season this year with the new offensive coordinator. And tied at fifth are the Saints and the Bucks, two teams from the NFC South. Bruce Arians now coaching the Bucks. That offense should be interesting. They obviously lost Sean Jackson, but Sean Payton and Drew Brees, fifth easiest schedule. Looking at the most difficult schedules, the top five, the Chiefs, hardest pass schedule of any team this upcoming season. But I've mentioned in the past, a great offense can overcome that, and they certainly do have a great offense and a great quarterback. But it's going to hurt teams like the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Miami Dolphins, the Oakland Raiders. Those are numbers two through four in terms of the most difficult schedule of pass defenses. And rounding out the rear is the Cleveland Browns. So Baker Mayfield, he struggled last year against good pass defenses, but he was a rookie. And he was modifying into a system that he wasn't taught in training camp because Freddie Kitchens took over. So he's going to, will he adapt to that in year two and play better against those tough defenses? Time will tell, but he's going to face a much more difficult schedule than he did last year.
That is fascinating stuff right there. And you're right, especially the pass defenses faced, especially for fantasy purposes, is really good stuff right there. Your fantasy guy who's also in your preview guide, is it Rich Rebar? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
He likes Jameis Winston, and the Bucks did show up on your five top easiest pass defenses faced. He thought that was a breakout possibility for Winston, which I found interesting. But yeah, so much of that is great fantasy information because you're right, not to be taken as the gospel. I'm not going to say Patrick Mahomes is going all of a sudden crater because of that. But for the other teams there, the Dolphins and the Raiders, a little Baker Mayfield, dousing of the flame there. And then on the easiest side, you're right, Kyler Murray, maybe a flyer there under Cliff Kingsbury as a very easy group of pass defenses faced, you know, assuming he'll play all 16 games. But, I mean, that stuff is great. How do you do this for rush defenses as well?
Yes, definitely. For rush defenses, we can run through that quickly, because it's not going to have as many implications for your overall, win losses, but let's hit it anyways. The easiest schedule is going to be for the 49ers. So that's going to be interesting because they have a big running back by committee there, and they've got Tevin Coleman now. Jerick McKinnon is healthy. They brought him in last year, but he tore his ACL, so he missed the whole year. How will he perform? Very interesting situation. Maybe not a lot of fantasy value to chew on until we see who's going to actually take the bulk of those carries. Another team that's really interesting is the Baltimore Ravens at number two easiest schedule. This team obviously loves to run the football, so they've got an easy schedule this year. The Seattle Seahawks, another team, ran too much last year, but how are they going to get away from it when they've got an easier schedule of run defenses this year? And then Arizona, another team, they just have an easier schedule of overall defense and easy schedule run. And then number five is the Pittsburgh Steelers. So James Conner, year two with him as a starter, that should be interesting. Overall, the most difficult schedule of run defenses, the Kansas City Chiefs. So the Chiefs just play like the most difficult overall schedule of opposing defenses, and it's very tough against run defenses. I still think that Damian Williams, what he does in the pass game and what he can contribute in the run game, coupled with how terrible Carlos Hyde really is. I mean, look at the stats. I had a tweet about him yesterday. The guy's terrible. I doubt he's going to take away substantial carries from Damian Williams. So I still like him in fantasy a lot. Green Bay, you know, it's going to be interesting. Matt LaFleur wants to start running the football more and being a little bit more balanced, but Green Bay faces the second most difficult schedule of run defenses. Your team, the Washington Redskins, tied with Tennessee for the third most difficult schedule of run defenses. And, of course, you know, Jay Gruden likes to run the football a lot. So does the Tennessee Titans. And they're going to have to do so against tough schedule of run defenses. Then the Atlanta Falcons round up the bottom five as the most difficult run defenses faced.
Warren, that is outstanding stuff. Last question before I let you go, though. Chiefs toughest, they're among the toughest when they face pass defenses. They're also among the toughest rush defense schedules they're facing. I have to word that properly. So Chiefs, once again, the pass defenses and rush defenses they face, they're number one in the toughest in those categories, but yet they're not in the top five of the toughest overall schedules?
In terms of the defenses they face, they are. In terms of the overall schedule, they rank 25th. So they have, what is that, like the eighth toughest schedule of overall opponents they face based on win totals. But they will be facing the most difficult schedule of opposing defenses this year based on my projection.
Gotcha. Okay, that clarifies it for me. Okay, same thing, by the way, I was going to ask for the Cardinals, but I guess that was the distinction. It's tough. It's really easy defenses they face, but not necessarily overall is their schedule that easy. It's really on that side of the ball. Warren Sharp, again, at Sharp Football, sharpfootballanalysis.com, sharpfootballstats.com. And again, the preview guide for everybody on the way out. Warren, where can they get that?
Sharpfootballanalysis.com if you want the PDF, or Sharp, or just go on Amazon if you want the printed book and just search for Warren Sharp's 2019 football preview.
All right. Warren, appreciate it. We'll talk to you during the season, my friend.
Thank you, Gil.
Warren Sharp, best in the business right there. Kind enough to join us in years past each and every Thursday with Bill Krakenberger, roundtable here on A Numbers Game at VSiN. We go through that week's NFL schedule, and we, of course, rail on stuff we saw the previous season. Hopefully we can get Warren to do that this year. He's a busy man, though. We'll try to get him to do it again.
Back for another season. Support for today's show comes from Bookmaker.eu. Bookmaker.eu, an industry leader for close to 30 years, pro players consider them a must because of these three things. They are first to post odds, they take the highest limits, and they pride themselves on never having kicked out a winning player. That is the holy trifecta, especially that last one, never having kicked out a winning player, a rarer and rarer commodity in this day and age. They're a high-volume sports book. They're best suited for the sophisticated player who understands sports betting. Also cater to large recreational players, though. And their motto, as I mentioned, where the lines originate. Because chances are the sports book at which you've been betting follows their lines, whether they want to admit it or not. And right now, if you visit bookmaker.eu/gill, that's bookmaker.eu/GILL, you can claim an exclusive 100% welcome bonus of up to $300. That's bookmaker.eu/gill to join and claim your welcome bonus of up to $300 right now.
Now, back to A Numbers Game with your host, Gil Alexander, broadcasting live from our VSiN studios in Las Vegas.
Back on A Numbers Game right here at VSiN, where sports betting analytics live. Actionable sports betting information here at SiriusXM Channel 204. First time on the show. Real happy to have this gentleman on. From Pro Football Focus, also a SiriusXM host himself. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Ratcliffe. Good morning to you, Jeff.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
I appreciate it, man. Jeff, I have a buddy who's in the Mountain Time Zone who told me before the show, when I told him you were coming on, he said, please tell Jeff I'm a little upset because his time slot changed for him. So now he doesn't hear you going into work. Now he has to play you in a podcast mode. When can people hear you?
Right now we are on at 1 Eastern on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio. So that's 210 on Sirius and XM 87. And hey, to my friend in the Mountain Time Zone, I wish I had to say
when
I'm on the air, but we know it doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, we do. Well, he'll appreciate the person-to-person message back, that's for sure. All right, so Jeff, there's so much I want to ask you here, so much. And maybe even I'll try to coax a player prop out of you or two after all this is done. But the first thing is, I'm just curious, how does one get into being the fantasy guy? Like, how was it? What were you doing before this? And then how did you finagle your way into being expert in this subject?
So I actually have a PhD in anthropology, and so
wow.
I've had two jobs in my lifetime that people have no idea what I do, because fantasy certainly that threw a lot of people for a loop initially. But you know, it was back. I received that in 2012, and it was back in 2010 when I was really just looking for ways to procrastinate. I'm not gonna lie, and fortunately at the time it was right before, you know, the industry kind of grew and developed into what it is today. And I reached out to the right person at the right time, happened to be Mike Clay, who's now at ESPN. And, you know, fortunately for me, Mike saw something and said, hey, you can write. I'm not going to pay you, but you can write. You know, we started from there, and honestly, nobody was paying attention. And really for me, it wasn't about, you know, getting any accolades or anything. I just wanted to talk about football because I love this game, and fantasy's been an outlet for that. Gambling's been an outlet for that as well. And, you know, over enough time, if you work hard at something, you can kind of get your way in there. So, you know, timing, of course, everything in life. And of course it was right before the big DFS boom that we saw in like 2013, 14 and 15. But yeah, that's the story. It's a weird story. It's not what I expected to do with myself.
No, I love it though, because some people are going to be like, oh, it's the old cliche. It really is true. Like, I mean, you worked for nothing. I mean, so many of us have that similar story where I used to say my podcast, you're lucky if I was wearing pants, right? I wasn't making any money doing the podcast, but you had a passion. You went for it. Yeah, a little timing perhaps, but you know, what's the saying? You know, luck is where preparation meets opportunity. And Mike Clay, who we've had on this show and on the podcast before, saw what he saw in you, and you have made the most of it. So let me ask you this, Jeff. Again, talking to Jeff Ratcliffe, who you can find on Twitter at Jeff Ratcliffe, RATCLIFFE on Twitter, the director of Pro Football Focus Fantasy. I'm curious, when you're making your rankings, and we'll dive into some of these, but your top 60 rankings, which you're a proponent for everybody to make their own top 60 rankings, but you provided, we'll actually show it up on the screen, what Jeff has as his top 60. How much of this is based on your own proprietary stats? How much of this is Pro Football Focus stats per se? And then to what extent are you incorporating day-to-day NFL news into this? So I won't take like an obvious thing like an injury, like Tyreek the other day, what was wheeled off the practice squad, but then he came back. I'm talking more like a Redskins Trent Williams thing as it applies to, say, Darius Geis. Are you watching that kind of thing very actively to monitor how you would put a guy like Geis up and down the board?
Yes. Now, there's a lot of inputs in football. That's the challenge. So, you know, I am fortunate enough to have a lot of cool stats at my disposal from working for PFF. But, you know, I have my own model that I use to really establish a baseline. So I always say projections. A lot of people take projections at gospel, but really what they are is averages, right? So they're a good starting spot, but they're really not the end point because they don't show you a ceiling and floor. You know, whereas with like gambling, for example, I think it's great to use projections. Sometimes with fantasy, it can be a little off, you know, especially when you're looking at season long. I much rather prefer weekly projections to season long projections, because the season long don't show you the ups and downs throughout the course of the season. Like, you get a guy like DeSean Jackson, who any week he could go for a $150 and two scores, and he could also go for 15 yards, right?
Right. Like, for weeks on end. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that doesn't show up in the season long projection. So I start there, but then there's an art to it. There's subjectivity to all this. And that the aspect of news is very important. You know, back in the day, I used to work for Roto World. So I know what, you know, goes into creating the news feed at Roto World. And the biggest lesson I learned was to react and not overreact. You know, I've seen people already moving Ezekiel Elliott down the board, but we're not at August 6th yet. You know, August 6th is the date. If he's not there, if he's hanging out in Mexico on August 6th, yes, now we need to react. But right now, moving him down our board isn't really doing anything, because I think it's just posturing. I think ultimately we do see him get paid. But then again, I didn't think Le'Veon Bell was going to sit out the entire season last year. So we got to get to August 6th first. If Zeke is not in camp, then we adjust. So that's the sort of the art to it, not overreacting to news.
Pre-August 6th, you've got Zeke as your number one player on your top 60 rankings. Saquon, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, no surprise, 2, 3, 4 there. But as far as you have your stats, or is it PFF stats? Like, what's in this mix?
Well, it's a lot of stuff that I use from PFF. So over the years now, this is my 10th NFL season with PFF. I've been able to kind of work through all the data. And that was the beautiful thing in the beginning. We had all these numbers and nobody knew what the heck to do with them. So, you know, when Mike Clay worked for us and I was working with him, we were tinkering with things and figuring out what meant something and what was just, you know, noise. And so I use a lot of that stuff. It's nothing, you know, I'm not compiling anything necessarily on my own just from a time standpoint, but I do have a whole bunch of sheets that I can input data into and then start to make sense of it pretty quickly.
Man, people loving these rankings on the screen, I'm sure, fantasy heads. All right, so there's a couple of Jeff Ratcliffe tenets that I love to pass along as sort of fantasy 101 to people. One of which is, and let's start here, the difference between PPR and non-PPR isn't often as significant as many make it out to be. We all have our friends. They're always like, is it PPR? Is it non-PPR? And you're saying, you know, not the most important thing in the world.
Exactly, exactly. I think sometimes we get bogged down by the microcosm, and the reality is we just want to make the best decisions possible. And you know, I get it because, hey, everybody's ramped up for fantasy, especially right now. If you're drafting like 3 weeks, you're thinking about that thing every day. Every third second, you're thinking about that thing.
So true.
So we get the paralysis by overanalysis. And the reality is, like, a running back like James White, is he more valuable in PPR than he is in non-PPR? Yes. But not as significantly as a lot of people think. He was 7th in PPR last year. He was 11th in non-PPR. So that's the difference of only a few spots. The thing about it is a back like James White, I don't think we should be looking at him as like, oh, well, we can't draft him in PPR or not, or in non-PPR, that is. The thing we have to realize is his fantasy production comes from catches. You know, he's not a high-floor running back. He may have a high ceiling on a weekly basis, but he also has a low floor given the volatility of touches. It's all about touches in fantasy football. And James White, you can't guarantee that he's going to go out and have like a 7, 8, 9 catch game every week. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, it's a little bit of a bumpier ride with those sorts of backs, and I tend to fade them even across the board. Even in PPR, I tend to fade guys like that.
Jeff, two of your big tenets, I think these are the macro ones. Draft for value, don't reach. Don't overlook the importance of roster construction, though, as well, early in your draft. So I put those two together. My oldest friend in the world, my best friend in the world, Tommy, back in D.C., he's got the old booby prize. He's got 12th in a 12-team snake draft. So he's got 12 and 13. So what do you say to someone like him if a lot of the running backs are off the board and he's staring at, say, I don't know, looking at your rankings, let's say Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, who many would say is head and shoulders above any other tight end in football, they're on the board. Do you say to someone like him, you know what, grab those two guys, Kelce being the best tight end, Hill being the ultimate game changer in fantasy, or are running backs, you know, and again, you've got to watch what your opponents are doing. What would you tell someone who's got number 12 right now in that case?
Well, I think my number one objective here this season is to get one of the top 10 running backs. I was saying top 11, but Melvin Gordon's situation bumps him out of there right now. It could change. We could go back to top 11. But I want to get at least one of those guys because I'm telling you, if you went Kelce Hill, you feel really good. You know, you put those stickers on the board, you get the oohs and ahs, you get the, oh, man, tight ends off the board already. But then in round 3, when it rolls back to you, and that's a long wait, who is on the board at running back? Now you're looking at probably like the 20th running back on the board. And I don't feel that comfortable there because running back is going to thin out really quickly. So in an optimal world, and I do not think at 12 that you're going to have all of the top 10 running backs taken already. In an optimal world, what I would do is very likely take one of those top 10, fade Kelce and take Hill, because you can get a good tight end. I'm drafting Jared Cook in the 7th round of 12-team leagues every draft I can this year. You can get a good tight end between rounds 5 and 7. You get Hunter Henry. You get O.J. Howard. You can get Evan Ingram. You can get Jared Cook. You can get Vance McDonald. You can get Eric Ebron. And I like that roster construction a lot more, having that top-end running back, than having Kelce.
So fade Kelce. In that case, fade Kelce because there are so many tight ends available. You can get great value late, perhaps take Hill, and perhaps take a running back. That is probably very sound advice. And that is sort of the corollary to the whole quarterback thing. And I think this is a massive thing, right? Because people are so tempted by a Patrick Mahomes early, by a, you know, I don't know, pick your quarterback, by an Aaron Rodgers early. But quarterbacks, that's the key to all these drafts, in your opinion. Just wait. Just wait as long as you can.
Absolutely. There is so much value. Now, I did a mock draft yesterday for CBS, and you're talking industry people are going to wait very long, but this got out of control. I had Russell Wilson in the 12th round and Ben Roethlisberger in the 13th round. And I know people are kind of running away from Ben because of no AB, but that's just crazy value. And it just shows you the depth of the position. I mean, Mahomes went relatively early, but you're talking, you can get guys who are legit fantasy starters as the 20th quarterback off the board. Kirk Cousins is going 20th. He had another 4,000-yard season and his first 30-touchdown pass season, you know, of his career, and people are acting like, you know, he's the plague at this point. I love the value. You could just totally wait. And if you're in a 10-team league, you could legitimately not draft a quarterback and still be fine. You could stream all season long and still be fine. If you're in an 8-team league, you don't have to draft a quarterback. So it's just so much depth to the position in this pass-happy NFL that we have right now. Just makes more sense to wait.
So many great fantasy tenants. That might be the greatest of them all. I got Jared Goff in the 12th round last year, Jeff. 12th round. You know, so it's so
beautiful.
True. Yeah, it's so true.
That's beautiful. Number two quarterback through the first 11 weeks of the season.
Yeah. And, and you have him recommended. We just flashed on screen about 9th, 10th round this year kind of thing for Jared Goff. So many things to ask you about fantasy. I'll save them for another time. Will you hang out right here after the break? Real quick segment. I want to ask you about a few NFL player props, if you would, Jeff.
Sure, let's do it.
Jeff Ratcliffe, Pro Football Focus, coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN.
It's A Numbers Game, live from the tip of the strip in Las Vegas. Get your fill of numbers even after the show is over by following the crew on Twitter, at Beating the Book and at VSiN Live. This week, here's some of what you missed.
We have to wait to the end of these fights to see these scorecards. Why? Please tell me why we don't get to see this after every round. Think about how much better, as bettors, first of all, as people who wager on these, and as just viewers and fans of boxing, if we could see the scorecard after every single round, how much more fair all of this would seem, how much more exciting it would be. And the boxers would know. I heard somebody, when I said that on the air the other day, somebody on Twitter at Beating the Book said, well, they're worried that one of the boxers, then if he's way up, he wouldn't have to go all out and fight. Well, I go, but that's the case in every other sport.
Right.
If a team's up 17 points, they can alter their strategy accordingly.
Yeah.
Why don't we have that for boxing?
Are you concerned about the Cowboys here with guy, I want to get paid? Oh, I want to get paid. I want my money.
Mm-hmm.
Zeke wants his cash.
Zeke wants it, but they have the fifth-year option for him. They don't have a fifth-year option with Dak because he wasn't a first-rounder. So he's going to have to get his money, too. So what do you do?
Kellen Moore calling the place.
Yeah.
How about that?
First-year offensive coordinator.
A little help from John Kitna. Apparently, Linehan was not well-liked, and he's out the door. So a lot of changes in Dallas.
Are you going to fall off your chair when they give Dak how much ever money they're going to give him? Because you know Paulie's going to be pushing probably, what, $30 million a year?
I'll tell you, I know this. His stats stink when Zeke's not on the field.
Mm-hmm.
They're horrible.
Talk about a running back that's worth a point or two to the line. It's Zeke.
It's night and day, his numbers with Zeke on and off the field. It's crazy. So I know Jerry got him some new toys, at least with the he lost Beasley, though. He get Witten back. And then they made the big trade last year, too, which I didn't like. But it worked out for the short term. We'll see how Cooper does again this year.
I will ask you this. In a day and age where running backs are inevitably replaceable almost on every single team, and quarterbacks are supposed to be, you know, the crown jewel for every team.
Not this guy.
If they could only pay one guy the money, Dak Prescott or Zeke, who do you give it to?
I'd have to go Zeke, and I'd have to maybe sign like a Case Keenum or somebody like that.
I'd go Zeke, and I'd try to replace Dak.
I just can't.
I would.
You can't beat your chest and say how great you are, but then you have horrific numbers when the guy's not on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he was suspended, how bad it was. Can't do it.
To A Numbers Game with your host, Gil Alexander, broadcasting live from our VSiN studios in Las Vegas.
We got a few good minutes left here with Jeff Ratcliffe from Pro Football Focus. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Ratcliffe. That's R-A-T-C-L-I-F-F-E. Just a couple other tenets of drafting in your fantasy drafts. Ceiling more important than floor. So in other words, what was the comparison you used, Jeff, between the two wideouts that you cited in your last article? Do you remember? To give a good example of that?
Oh, man, off the top of my head, I'm not really sure.
It was the Tyler Lockett versus somebody, versus Larry Fitzgerald. That was it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Larry Fitzgerald is obviously one of those name brand guys. We see this year in and year out. Everybody knows him. It's sort of comfortable. You know he's older, but you still draft him anyway. But there's almost no ceiling with Larry Fitzgerald at this point. Hall of Famer, you know, future Hall of Famer, you know, one of the best fantasy options of all time at the position. But Tyler Lockett has juice. You know, he has major upside. Now, granted, it's a run-heavy offense, but he still scored 10 touchdowns. I expect that, you know, efficiency to regress this year because he did that on 57 catches. But, you know, he's got so much more upside, especially, you know, figuring to be the number one target now with Doug Baldwin out in the mix. So if you might have him ranked closely, well, the reality is you should lean towards a guy with the higher ceiling.
All right, and as you select players from the top 60, don't worry about bye weeks or players on the same team, at least not that high in the draft. So again, great stuff from Jeff. Check out the articles, Pro Football Focus. Such great work. And there's so many fantasy questions I could ask you, but in our remaining time here, let me just throw a player prop or two at you, or maybe you have one that you want to throw out. This is from DraftKings, Jeff, about Lamar Jackson specifically. I'm curious if you have any thoughts on this. Total rushing attempts on the regular season for Lamar Jackson of the Ravens, it's set at 190.5. The over is the dog at plus 110. The under juiced as the favorite, about minus 134 on that one. Any thoughts there?
I mean, I can't see him getting close to that number. I know a lot of people are looking at the over 17. It was just over 17 attempts per game from week 11 on. We're not going to get close to that at all. And we actually currently have projected 164 rushing attempts. So that'd be a big time under. If the team wants, if they want to make it through the season, with him under center, they can't be giving him that sort of volume as a runner. So I think that I would take the under on that one. And that's one I'm comfortable on. Like with player props, and by the way, like if you're listening to this, you're a fantasy player. Player props is the natural. Like
yes.
For me, I always was a little intimidated by going, you know, picking games against the spread or money line or over under. But player props, I mean, we're studying these players anyway, and I think it's one of the bigger advantages that you're going to have over sports books. So I like, you know, when I'm not right on that line, when I'm, you know, way under like this on like with Lamar, I am going to, you know, take that action.
Real quick here, Jeff, in our remaining few seconds, is there a player or player that you think is overrated or underrated by the market, whether it's a quarterback, running back, or receiver, yardage-wise?
You know, I haven't really seen much that would be too overrated. There are some that I think are a little underrated. I keep seeing Antonio Brown's yardage total just feels a little under. And I know people are you know, downgrading him because Derek Carr from Ben Roethlisberger thing. But the reality is he's going to see volume in that offense. And AB could still go out and put up a 1,400-yard season. So I've seen that over-under around about 1,200 yards for much of the offseason.
Yeah, 12.
I would definitely take the over on that.
Yeah, 1,225 over at DraftKings. So big over for you on that. Jeff, we got to get you back because we're running out of time. But this is great stuff. Again, at Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter. Jeff, good luck with all your drafts. And we'll be watching you at Pro Football Focus, my friend. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Jeff Ratcliffe, debut performance here on A Numbers Game at Visa.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
And more about that golf day just before we get to Todd right here, because you make a good point also, Jeff, off air, which is you might want to take a flyer on one of the long shots. It should be pointed out that if it wasn't Koepka specifically, I probably wouldn't go plus 200, right? But it's Koepka. Talking to Todd Wright, by the way, the greatest radio host there ever was, ladies and gentlemen, by my money. I will not be debated on this. Former host of the All Night with Todd Wright show at ESPN Radio back in the day. And as I mentioned, the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast and the Todd Wright Toddcast these days. So, Todd, before we get into specific fantasy football questions, you are a noted commissioner who runs his leagues with an iron fist.
Yes.
I'm playing with that, but maybe you do in some extent. You wanted to say something about those who are setting up leagues. You had something to say.
Well, what I've been doing on the Fantasy Football Podcast since we came back for the season, for the first time in 4 years, we took a little bit of a hiatus with the Fantasy Podcast. So I wasn't talking Fantasy Football from, say, February until June, is set up your leagues properly. And you've given me a forum, Gil, to talk to a lot of fantasy owners about this. I've even had some of your listeners say, hey, we want to adopt some of the things that you talk about, but we're having a tough time convincing our commissioner. So many commissioners are stuck in the past. They haven't evolved their leagues. And I get help now when I even see some other fantasy people writing columns on major websites saying, time to fix fantasy football. Now, they don't do enough. So just a few of the things I say. First of all, I say PPR is outdated. Now, I'm not expecting everyone to drop PPR, but here is the simple argument. Running backs in the 90s, when you had Emmitt Smith and Thurman Thomas and Barry Sanders and Chris Warren, and they dominated the game. They touched the ball so much. Now, you don't have, I mean, really, Ezekiel Elliott, and that's a whole other issue again right now. I feel like I'm covering Emmitt Smith again 26 years
exactly.
later. Running backs don't dominate the game like they used to. So they don't dominate fantasy football like they used to. If you use a yardage-based league and you use fractions where every gain of yardage by every player ultimately produces points, I don't understand why, say, anyone who catches a ball and doesn't gain yards should earn a point. The running back doesn't earn a point for handing him the ball. In most leagues, the quarterback doesn't earn anything for simply throwing the ball or having it caught. So I've never understood that. So, I'm losing this battle, but I think over time people will see PPR is too much of a reward for just catching a ball and doing nothing with it. If the player does something with it in a yardage-based league, you are rewarded with the yards. Just as the player helps his team gain yardage, he helps your fantasy team. Why should any player receive a point for a reception that gains no yards? And it's not just those 0 yards, just in general. The other things that I've talked to you about very quickly, there aren't enough tight ends to go around. And once the bye weeks start hitting, it's almost an every week thing. I got sick of answering all these. Well, I need a tight end this week. No, you don't. Change your league. Make the tight end voluntary. It's not mandatory.
I love that.
You simply use a wide receiver / tight end flex. You replace the tight end position with a wide receiver or a tight end. So if you do have, say, Zach Ertz, or you have Travis Kelce, you can play him. Or you have, or you're big on Evan Engram, that's fine. But you could go the entire year not touch the tight end position, and it doesn't matter. You just play a third wide receiver in that spot. It impacts your league not at all negatively, unless you're forcing tight ends down people's throats, which you shouldn't do because there aren't enough to go around. The other thing that I really, really wish more leagues would do is modify kicker scoring. Because let's say in a standard scoring league, even with the yardage incentives, I've never understood why a 50-yard field goal should be worth 5 points and a 49-yard touchdown isn't worth a 24-yard touchdown pass isn't worth 5 points. So I eliminate any field goal being worth more than 3. I don't think your kicker should be able to roll up 20 points in a week. So you make every field goal worth 3. And for those who say, well, wait, you know, that what about the incentive for anything from outside of 40? Well, you put in a penalty for anything inside of 40. So it's basically this simple. If your kicker makes any field goal, just like in an NFL game, it's worth 3 points. But if he misses anything from 39 and in, you lose 1 point. And the same on extra points. You get 1 if he makes it, -1 if he misses it. This curbs kicker scoring, and I think then falls more in line with the actual game itself. Those are my biggest ones. Another one I'm on is the dropping of DST entirely. I've never played the IDP, but by dropping, DST, Gil, is just too random. It is. It's just so random how the points are accumulated, and so many smart owners can just throw a dart each week and mix and match and look for matchups. And to me, that takes away from the value of building a season-long team. So in my podcast league and in my personal league, I've eliminated defense special teams altogether. None of us stare up there who are fantasy football fans. You're not staring up there rooting for your defense. And if you are, to me, it's pretty pathetic. So I think you were eliminated as the most random element of fantasy football.
You know what's a great point about that one, Todd, though, is there's always a guy in everybody's league who makes hay on the waiver wire defensive pickup based on the matchup every week. And it occurs to me that it penalizes people who have lives. You know what I mean? Who aren't as sharp on the waiver wire. It's just there's that. And the last one about the PPR, non-PPR thing. Jeff Ratcliffe from Pro Football Focus, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He was on the show last week talking about this. He said he's actually run the numbers on that stuff. He goes, even if you have that distinction, it ultimately doesn't really matter that much in the end. That's what his point was. So that would just sort of buttress your point from his perspective as well. I have so many questions about individual players. Before we go to break, though, let me just ask you one generality. Let's talk about just mistakes, general mistakes that people make that you just want people to stop doing. Give me those.
Well, first of all, is don't be a homer in your fantasy league. Generally, it's not going to work. Now, there are examples where it can. I have a Philadelphia Eagle homer. I know, Gil. I know. Well, he's the assistant pro at a private club, so I let him in the league so I can play there.
That's a Cowboy fan talking to a Redskin fan right there, by the way.
Right, and he's an Eagles fan. So 2 years ago, he went all in on the Eagles. It actually worked. The only Eagles he didn't own were the two I drafted, Ertz and Foles. But he had other ones, and it did work out for him because they won the Super Bowl, and they were good all year, and he didn't lose Wentz until right about the time the fantasy playoffs began. But he got by because he had somebody named Mahomes on his bench. So that all said, don't be a homer. I don't know about you, Gil. I mean, we've all been there, whether we're losing against the spread or we're losing, our favorite team is losing. I like to separate. So I'm a Cowboys fan. If the Cowboys blank the bed 1 week, I want to bounce back with my fantasy team. I can't do that if I have a bunch of Cowboys on my fantasy team. So I think you split your loyalties and you limit yourself to one player where you didn't overdraft for that player off your favorite team. And that's it. I also think you're a smarter football fan and you know more about the 32-team NFL for gaming purposes, betting purposes, and overall knowledge if you force yourself to combine a fantasy football team from around the league and not just your favorite team.
I like it. That's your A number one? That's the number one mistake to avoid?
Well, that's the biggest, the biggest one, because everybody plays in a league where there's an obvious homer or two.
When
they make a pick like that, they'll say homer. But what it does is you let those homers be homers because it elevates the value of the player they should have picked, and it keeps them in the draft pool for fantasy owners who aren't homers and aren't filling their team with their players on their favorite team.
Makes sense to me.
That's a big one.
Makes sense to me. And thank you for using the word blank as well, Todd. I appreciate that.
Yes. You got it.
So we'll come back. Hang it tight because I want to ask you about specific things. One, your take on drafting quarterbacks high that some people seem to want to do this year. And specifically, you mentioned Ezekiel Elliott. We'll talk about him. Antonio Brown, Melvin Gordon. And then the Travis Kelce conundrum. For those who are having tight ends rammed down their throats, as you say, Todd, I want to ask you all these questions. It's fantasy football with Todd Wright, ladies and gentlemen, host of the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast, who, by the way, answers all your fantasy football questions at toddwrightfantasyfootball@gmail.com. Coming right back, all those questions and more on A Numbers Game at VSiN.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Thank you, Ron Flatter. It is back on A Numbers Game. Gil Alexander, Jeff Parles is here, and Todd Wright from the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast and Todd Wright's Toddcast. Kind enough to join us once again. All right, Todd, you ready for some fantasy football speed round, sir? Ready for that?
Yes, and also at the end, ask me about the FedEx Cup final again. I misunderstood your question about changes. I want to address that again at the end.
Nope.
I apologize. I misunderstood the question.
No problem. We will do that. Let's take someone you just mentioned from your beloved Dallas Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott. I am still of the mindset that he that they get this worked out. He's Zeke after all, and he's the engine for the Cowboys. But, you know, people's fantasy drafts are starting to come now. What do you do? We had this, you know, on draft eve with Le'Veon Bell last year. How do you handle this with Ezekiel Elliott with the sort of the question mark that he is?
The way I would handle it is, here's how I handled it 2 years ago, and also employing my Homer theory when there was this thought he'd be suspended for the first six games. And when that was pending, I went out in the first round and I drafted then a solid RB1 middle of the first round in Shady McCoy. And then we wrapped around snake draft two. And ironically, I took Melvin Gordon. By the time it got around to me in the third round, Elliott was still on the board because he had scared so many owners away. I took him then because now he's a bonus to me. I already have my RB1 and I have my RB2. So even if Elliott missed the first six games, if I've drafted properly at 1 and 2, I didn't need him anyway because none of those bye weeks came into play. Now, that ironically was a season also where I picked up Alvin Kamara on waivers, I think after week 1, it might've been week 2. So even when Elliott hit his 6 week suspension, I was prepared. So I think you have to treat an Elliott and you have to treat a Gordon that way. If you're drafting before their holdouts ultimately end, look, other owners are probably going to jump in front of you, but that's the way I would treat it, is don't treat them like a starter. But if they fall into their lap and you can put them on your bench, they have great value the minute this is all resolved.
But otherwise, let somebody else draft him. In other words, if somebody wants to overdraft him by your standards there, let him do it. So, Melvin Gordon, who you brought up there, ironically, you went with the last time this happened, in one of, if not the most ill-conceived holdout, in my opinion, of all time, I guess you just completely ignore him for a while. Let someone else deal with that headache. Because he's got backups in Los Angeles. Austin Eckler being the biggest example of that. Melvin Gordon may never be the Melvin Gordon this year if that lasts too long.
Yeah, it's not very sensible to me. I understand what he's personally trying to do. There is no trade market for him unless, say, within this week in a non-contact injury or a scrimmage or a week 2 exhibition game, some Super Bowl contender's running back goes down and they feel the need to make that deal. Ultimately, I think Gordon will be in for the Chargers. It does help Gordon's case that here we go again with Austin Eckler, who had some nice touches on the opening drive of the exhibition game against the Cardinals, and then inside the 5-yard line, the ball gets yanked out of his hands. That's why Eckler didn't get more touches last year, because he can't keep the football off the ground. So that helped Gordon a little bit, but yes, I would ultimately treat that the same way, although I think Gordon gets in before Elliott.
Okay, what about Antonio Brown? This is a developing situation, Todd. First it's the foot. Now it's, listen, I'm not playing football per Antonio Brown. He says, until I am allowed to use my old helmet, which the NFL has now banned. And so he didn't show up for the first preseason game. And we don't know really what the story is with him, given that the Raiders are the Raiders and that there is at least some question mark as to how well their offense will do. Do you also let somebody else in fantasy deal with that headache?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, where Antonio Brown for the last, 3-4 years has been the first wide receiver on the board. And even last year, I talked to you at this time about the Antonio Brown dilemma. How do you, are you that owner in the first round that selects Antonio Brown, but by the time it wraps around to you in the second round, are there any RB1s left? Are you chasing RB1 points the whole season because you took Antonio Brown where everybody else was taking RB1? Look, I try to stay away from rookies and I stay away from free agents because we just, there's the unknown. To use a common term, I like to draft chalk in fantasy. I think later rounds or waivers are where you ultimately start taking some chances because there's less downside. I take the established, the sample size, and once play. Look, Le'Veon Bell's in this category to me, too. Like, I don't know where he's going to be on third down until I'll know maybe by week 3, week 4.
Yeah.
Where when he was in Pittsburgh, we knew where he'd be on third down. He'd be split out as a wide receiver. on third down with the Jets, I don't know where he's going to be. So how does that impact his value? And with Antonio Brown, there are at least four, if not five, other wide receivers that right now look like they're worth more of a wide receiver one investment than Antonio Brown, who, correct me if I'm wrong, Gil, it seems like Antonio Brown is just making up any excuse he can to not play football anymore.
Totally. Totally. At least not show up for training camp at the very minimum, right? But, I mean, maybe right. maybe even more. All right, we'll close out with two more broad ones here. If I'm in a snake draft, 12, 13-ish, let's say I'm somewhere in that area. Let's say I've got 12, 13, or I've got 11, 14, whatever it is in a 12-team league. And then Travis Kelce is available. I know the tiers of tight ends is probably, there's probably Kelce, two others, and then everybody else. Are you a guy that believes because he's that, and again, I know your general philosophy on tight ends, but in leagues where tight ends right. are still happening, do you grab Travis Kelce, or do you or do you just not care about tight end at that point and just wait for the masses of them?
I owned him last year, and I loved him. And I was in a non-mandatory tight end league, and I love him. I mean, everything sort of fits here, that he's on a big-time offense without Gronk. He's a big-time tight end, and you know he basically plays like a wide receiver. We've talked about that before on your show. Look, I wouldn't be drafting him in the second round, but I think some will overdraft him this year, probably more so him than Ertz, because basically, as Gronk used to be overdrafted, Kelce will now be overdrafted. And honestly, Gil, Kelce will probably give you more on the investment because Gronk didn't play 16 games. He, you know, was kind of a, you know, he'd play two and then miss one, or play, have one big game and one ass game. With Kelce, it's more consistent. Although I've talked to you about this too. You sort of analyze each Chiefs game. Is it a big Kelce game or is it a big Tyreek Hill game?
Yeah, you've
said
that.
If Hill had been suspended, then Kelce's value probably is in the second round and up with some of those top five, top six wide receivers. Hill wasn't suspended, but yes, Kelce is likely worth the investment because he's attached to Mahomes and he stays healthier than Gronk did.
Kelce, Ertz, Kittle, probably the top three tight ends that I was referring to.
Probably. Yeah. Although Evan Engram has a lot of value all of a sudden because the Giants lose a wide receiver every 10 minutes.
That's very, very true. Every 10 minutes, exactly on the clock. All right, last thing then, quarterbacks. And I've talked about this with previous guests, the very few that I have talking about fantasy football, but yours is an opinion that I value perhaps more than anyone's. Quarterback. There are so many of them. I drafted Jared Goff in the 12th round, for God's sakes, last year, Todd.
Yeah.
But there's Patrick Mahomes. You let somebody else have him, and you just wait for quarterback?
Yeah, you do. If you're in a one-quarterback league, and what I mean by that is you only start one quarterback. More and more leagues, even my personal league, use two quarterbacks or the super flex, which allows you to play a second quarterback or a running back or a wide receiver or a tight end. That's why it's called super flex. You can play anything you want in that spot. In two quarterback leagues or leagues with a super flex, the value of the quarterbacks in the draft are elevated. You can get Patrick Mahomes going in the first round. You can get Aaron Rodgers going in the second round. You get Drew Brees going maybe third round. That's going to happen. But in single quarterback leagues, and I recently did a television feature with a friend down here for a station that I'm on in the greater Tampa Bay area. He did a mock draft, and I kept telling him, wait until all the other teams in the league pick the quarterback. You will still have value there, and then you take two. And he took back-to-back, after everyone else had their quarterback, Big Ben and Phillip Rivers. The downside is those guys give you no rushing yards or no rushing touchdowns, but we both know any week, Roethlisberger and Rivers can put up 400 yards. So the value is there later in the single quarterback league.
Todd Wright from the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast and the Todd Wright Podcast.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential.
We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.